Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in. Spencer German, Garrett Bush in for Ken and Lima this morning. It's the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima. Appreciate those of you jumping on in with us. We have a bunch of different things to get into. We do want to talk Cavs, but some nice listeners waited on hold through the break to jump in on the conversation about Kevin Stefanski or Andrew Berry. If you can only have one, who are you keeping? Who are you letting go? We'll go out to the phones right now. Cool Ray. Or no, let's go to Joe, actually, in Fort Campbell. What's up, Joe?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Go Browns. Listening to the whole conversation. In 2017, the Browns didn't win a game, and they started a rebuilding process, which involved drafting Baker Mayfield and making some investments. Over the next two seasons, the Browns progressed and made the playoffs in 2020. And when the 2021 season ended after Baker played injured, a lot of people were questioning whether or not Baker was going to be the team that would win them a championship. And I think we were open-minded to a quarterback idea, but then the management team decided to go all in on this investment with Deshaun Watson. And I fully believe that with how catastrophic this deal could be for the future of the Browns, when the organization decides that they're going to part ways with Deshaun Watson, everybody who was involved in the deal needs to get fired because this is going to set us back big time.
I think, Joe, to your point, like I've always said, I didn't have a problem with the Browns trying to what they thought at the time was like upgrade a quarterback, right? Like I think we all saw that last year with Baker. There were some issues there. It seemed like it was between the ears, especially with him after the injury that he had. And clearly we've since learned that there were some immaturity issues and they didn't think he was mature enough. And I get all those things. So they wanted to move on. I have no problem with the fact that they tried to upgrade the position. But I think, to your point, like we'll always look back and wonder if they should have pursued somebody else.
We might have to lose Myles Garrett because of this. Like, and the cap setbacks
or at least waste his career. Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I think Joe, and I appreciate the call, man. Thanks for calling in this morning. I think Joe speaks to a large contingent of the fan base, Garrett, that does feel sort of, you know, they feel sort of frustrated by this entire situation. And I said this earlier, like a couple weeks ago, after the whole Deshaun Watson got hurt and some of the fans cheered thing. I don't know, and I understand, like, Browns fans have sat through a lot of bad. You know this, like, 0-16 in 2017, all the years before that where they were just bad, couldn't make the playoffs, all these different things. This year has felt like the most like lethargic, indifferent, disinterested this fan base has ever been in my mind because of how bad they started the season, and it was because it all centered around who was at quarterback.
When Deshaun wasn't playing well, and I used to say, look, I know Katz is a little salty, because this team has Super Bowl aspirations.
Right.
But I said, listen, I take no delight in doing victory laps and saying I told you he was garbage because what is going to happen is when that chess piece is taken off the board, you're left with the ramifications of what's next.
Yeah.
And what's next is you're looking at a full-blown rebuild of some sort. Changes are going to happen.
Yeah.
When you miss on a quarterback, and here's the thing that we have to say and we have to look at. I know what human nature is. Human nature is one of those things where you want somebody to tell you exactly what your diagnosis is. You want the doctor, if you're sick and you keep going back to the hospital and they give you antibiotics and it don't work, they're giving you CAT scans, MRIs, you don't know what's going on, over-the-counter medicine's not working. After some point, you're going to go back to the doctor and tell them, listen, just tell me what's wrong. Like, I need to know something. At least if it's something bad, like cancer or a heart problem, or I can at least ramp up and feel like I can understand what it is and I could go try to fight it. The most annoying thing is somebody telling you, I don't know. And that is the reason people don't really want a full rebuild. Because think about it. What if you go back to the doctor and they tell you, well, you do got the C word and you got a bad heart. You're like, hold on, that's two things. I can't have two things wrong with me. But what if it's the Browns? And you look at it, you got a quarterback problem. You might have a general manager problem. And you might have a head coach problem.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't want to just flat out say, all of it got to go. Because if all of it goes...
You want to tweak one thing at a time and see if it fixes it, yeah.
And think about it. He brings up 2017. We were all in the mix. I was old. We were all old. We sacrificed Joe Thomas's career. That man never played one playoff game. Nope. He had an opportunity to go to the Broncos and all of those other places.
Sacrificed it for a rebuild. You're 100%
guess what,
right.
And guess what them picks we got? Those picks we turned into great people. Chubb, Miles Garrett, Denzel Ward, David Njoku. And guess what? Y'all squandered all that. And so now you're telling me you're doing fire sales now a couple years later and getting whiffed on two quarterbacks? Nah, some got to change, dog. Somebody got to go.
We'll talk more about what needs to happen, what needs to change. I will say, and this can maybe be a nice tease for that conversation later, just in regards to whether or not they need to do a full rebuild or not. I do think, like, Andrew Berry had the comments, and we'll play them later for you guys, where he talked about, you know, in this sport, it's not like baseball and basketball where you got to always tear it down to the studs. I do subscribe to that a little bit because I do think like there is a path that I can see towards this thing. Maybe you come out on the other side okay. If it goes right, you got to thread the needle. That's the problem. It's like you got to do stuff that we haven't really been able to trust the organization to do before. But if you can do it, there's a path that you come out and you're okay on the other side of this. But we'll talk about that a little bit more later because, guys, tonight... The Cleveland Cavaliers back in town, 9-0, best start in the history of the franchise to a season. Kenny Atkinson, we know his brilliance has been on full display, how great the offense has been. Evan Mobley's finally taken that leap for the unicorn player that he thought he could be. Darius Garland is back to looking like an all-star. And despite all those things, the Cavaliers at 9-0 so far this season haven't yet beaten a team that is over 500 this season. Now, I'm not trying to take away from the fact that 9-0 to start a season is something. That is a statement in of its own right. Like, you're sort of cementing yourself as you're stockpiling a lot of wins in the Eastern Conference that are going to help you with tiebreakers and things. You're getting a nice little buffer sort of to start the year in the Eastern Conference as that one seed, and maybe that helps you so you don't fall too far down the standings later when things get a little... I think there's going to be some bumps in the road at some point here. There's a lot of good about this, and it certainly is a statement that you change the coach, you keep this team largely the same, and you're out here just balling on another level that many of us didn't necessarily think was even possible. But I think tonight, G, with the Warriors in town, 7-1 on the season, that team has been the dynasty. Like, they're the golden, they're the gold standard of this league right now. Like, stay competitive around star players. They broke up their big three, quote-unquote, this offseason, but they're still really competitive. They got the great coach. They got one of the superstar best players of all time on their team. You beat them. Also a team that, by the way, for a little while we considered a rival of ours because we were meeting them in the finals every single year. You beat that team tonight. I think that is, like, the first real, like, statement win for this team where it's like, if you're not taking this team seriously already, now you're going to have to start taking them seriously.
Well, I agree, and I disagree a little bit. I think that they've had three or four statement wins. They just have come while people kind of are not really paying attention. I think the one big statement win is they came from behind in New York. They were down. New York made a bunch of splash moves. They got Cat. That Karl-Anthony Towns, they brought him in. They got Mikal Bridges, they brought him in. They still had the team that they was coming off a really great year with Jalen Brunson and Hart and all those guys. So I thought, you know, it'll take time for those guys to get together. Yeah. But the
Cat- and that's why, for me, the Knicks game, you bring up the comeback, that is a massive point. And I think you're right, because that stage has been a bugaboo for this team, as we know. Like, playing at MSG, down double digits.
And they got punked by them. They got punked by them a couple years ago.
That's not really an area where this team has thrived in the past. So to see them overcome that on that stage
early.
But the point you brought up at the end there is what I go back to, is like, I think that that win was a big one and it was important. I think, though, because the Knicks are different this year and they're still sort of figuring things out, I didn't put a ton of stock in that one so early in the season just yet. But I'm interested to see how that matchup looks like down the stretch later in the season when the Knicks finally kind of figure out what they're doing.
But we also have to give the Cavs credit, because they're not different. They have the same players, but they don't have the same philosophy, the same coach, the same attitude. They're doing different things, running different sets. So we can say that the Cavs, if the Cavs came out and struggled a little bit, the first thing we would say is, look, it's a brand new system. It's a brand new coach. They're trying to play it in a way that moves the basketball that is completely different from what they were doing under JB, which was pick and roll and doing and keeping Evan Mobley just sitting around. But now, that's a testament to what they are able to do, and it makes you more encouraged, because they're 9-0 right now, and they ain't even been around them but one summer. So think about what they'll be able to do when they're completely comfortable in the system. So I give them credit for that. I give them credit for coming out and playing hard and playing who's on the schedule. I think sometimes we kind of diminish what teams are doing because other teams aren't good at that point. Well, we can't help that. Hey, if they want to win some games, I welcome you to it. Win all the games you can, and you can have a nice record like us. But I do agree with this, though. This game, because it is the Golden State Warriors, because they have a 7-1 record, and because they do have Kerr and Draymond Green and Steph Curry, one of the best players to ever put the jersey on, this is going to carry a little more cachet. Eyeballs are going to be on it. And if they can continue to play that way, you got a different response.
And we've already heard the national media largely start to take notice. Like, I'm seeing the Cavs pop up near the top of like a lot of these power rankings now, and they're talking about this team as all of a sudden the darlings of the NBA. There's a lot more chat. And listen, like, think about how far we've come. When the chatter around this Cavs team the last couple years, if they were getting talked about nationally, it was always with the caveat of like, where's Donovan Mitchell going to play next year? Right. He's not going to stay there. So the fact that now, like, we've come a long way to have this team now talked about in a way where it's like, they're actually good. We have to take them seriously. I think this accelerates that conversation further. And speaking of accelerating that conversation even further, at what point should we elevate our expectations for the Cavaliers? How high were your expectations before the 9-0 start to the season? 216-474-0092. We're still talking Cavs, though. I think that tonight is like the biggest statement of a win the Cavs can make at this point in the season, understanding that 9-0 is a statement in of itself. But the other part of this, G, like, however long this continues, and even if they were to lose tonight, and then on the other side of that loss, they go on another win streak, and they stack a whole bunch of other wins. At what point should we elevate our expectations for the Cavaliers? And I'm going into this understanding, like, I don't even know, like, where you set the bar already. I'll just tell you point blank, like, for me, it was... You got to at least get to, or the bar should be set at least at get to the conference championship. Because that's the thing that's eluded them, right? It was, we're a play-in team, we lost in the play-in tournament. Then the next year, you earn a bye, but you get gentlemen swept by the Knicks in an embarrassing fashion. Year after that, you sort of manipulated it so that you got a easier matchup in the first round. Took you 7 games, but you did get out of the first round. And then you played the Celtics, who were just a juggernaut, and you had some injuries, so you can lean on the idea that, like, well, if we had those guys, maybe it would have gone differently. Donovan Mitchell talks about how he's never made it out of the first round. He's got to get to that point if he's going to be considered in the pantheon of all-time great players. So for me, it's like the bar for me is the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, you got to get there. But if this kind of continues, if this run continues, even if it's with a loss thrown in tonight, when do you change those expectations, whatever your expectations for the team might be?
So my expectations was always Eastern Conference Finals. You're dealing with Boston, who obviously is you know, I think it's going to really help them. The fact that they've had four Olympians or three, three. Should have four. Yeah. But I think you automatically grow from an experience like that, playing with all those guys, coming off a championship. And on top of it, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown being left off and Jason Tatum just sitting on the bench. Like,
yeah, they obviously the Celtics just played the Warriors the other night. Like, they're on their way back, heading west tonight. And I don't know if you heard the video of when Steve Kerr was announced. Like, those fans were booing him.
Hey, so you gave them a little bit more motivation. So I think the Celtics are you know, obviously the team to beat in the East. But the way that the Cavs are playing, I think that it doesn't change my perspective on it. I think what really got JB Bickerstaff fired was this. He never understood that progress was a thing that happens over time. He always considered this team. It used to irk me when he said, "We're young." No, you're not. JB, you're not a young team. Like, you're using that as a crutch. Our guys fought and did certain things.
Were young by age standards, but maybe not by, like, at this point, like, at the end of the playoffs this year, you weren't young by, like, NBA experience standards, yes. Right? Because you've been to the playoffs now two times.
And Darius Garland, what is this, in his, what, sixth year?
I think fifth year, I think.
Donovan Mitchell has been one of the best players in the game for a long time, for multiple years.
Yeah. When he first got traded to Cleveland, I was shocked to find out, like, how young he still was. Like, he was only, I think, like 26 at the time. 6 year for Darius Garland. But yeah, like, I was like, I feel like Donovan Mitchell's been doing this for like a decade at this point. Yeah, like, he's been so damn good. I always hear him, like, talked about as one of the best players in this league. So that was even surprising to sort of just be reminded how young he still was as a player. But to your point, he had a lot of experience coming in.
These guys, and he never elevated the expectation level for what the Cavs could be. And what ended up happening was, it's cool for you to motivate guys and get them to play hard and get them to play defense and be a motivational guy. But after a short period of time, those guys are going to say, listen, it ain't about you motivating us. It's, can you call a out of bounds play? Can you get me a shot coming off a screen if I need to? Can you make adjustments to shut down a guy who's hot like Jason Tatum? And those are the basketball IQ type things that the Cavs just really struggle with. So when I look at Kenny Atkinson, I just like his energy level and the way he goes about putting expectations on him. You know, in the press conference they talked about it, Kenny Atkinson told reporters that, hey, look, Evan Mobley, I tell him every time, I point out on film, when you get the ball, push it. Don't worry about what other people's doing. Don't worry about the initiating offense and worrying about where Garland at is. You take the ball. And every time he does it, we show him and reinforce that type energy so that he becomes more comfortable with becoming a playmaker like that.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, the more he does that, and I think that's kind of Kenny Atkinson's point, is like, I'm okay with you pushing and maybe not being totally comfortable with that in the early going because you haven't necessarily done that before. But the more he does it, the better he's going to look at, like, surveying the court while he's dribbling and seeing, like, oh, I got Darius in the corner, I can kick it. Yeah, like, he's definitely brought something out of this team.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thing that we, I mean, this is what we hope for, right? Like, when they kept the team the same, and some of us were, I was certainly banging the drum of, like, I feel like you can't just stay the same in this league and expect different results. They stayed the same roster-wise, but the coach really has been the thing, at least to this point, that's unlocked a lot for them. I don't know, like, if you have to, this start has to make you change your expectations wholly. And if you're setting the bar at the Eastern Conference Finals anyway, like, you're already, the bar's already so high. The only other place you can take it, obviously, is, well, I think they now can go to the championship or win the championship. There's only really two more steps beyond that. I think I can tell you, like, naturally, where it's going to happen is if they stay, if they keep playing really good basketball, even if they're, I don't expect them to be undefeated when this happens, but December 1st is when they first had, they have their first matchup with the Boston Celtics. And whether they have one loss by then, three losses, five losses by then, whatever, I think that's going to be the point where people actually start revisiting the expectation conversation. Because if they play well in that game and lose, but it's close, down to the wire, or if they beat them, then I think people are going to be like, they're going to talk themselves into every way they can. Hey, you know, I think that this team can do this, and I think this team can actually compete with the Celtics. I think they're on the level playing field now. The one thing I want to warn against, though, G. Bush, and this is why, like, I'm keeping my expectations where they're at right now and just kind of enjoying the ride, is because we know that the regular season is always different than the postseason. Like, mm-hmm. We know this team has done it in the regular season. Maybe not to this level. This is a different level, and Kenny Atkinson's going to pull different strings than J.B. Bickerstaff did, and he's going to have different game plans and thought processes when he goes to the playoffs with this team, and we're assuming they're going to make the playoffs at this point. I think that's probably a safe bet. But he has to do it on that stage for us to really believe that they're ready to take any sort of leap in terms of expectations. So I'm going to just try my best this whole season, even as I get excited about 9-0, maybe 10-0, whatever, to keep my expectations where they're at, because it makes the season more enjoyable until we get to that point in the playoffs where we can definitively say, okay, this team can go to that stage, or they might actually have to change some things up next offseason.
I think, coming from an athletic background, I think that it's important for the fans to understand that, like, you know, you can't fast forward the regular season.
Yeah.
And the reason why you shouldn't even try to fast forward the regular season is because you need to be putting work in to be getting, you know, the cliche.
The regular season is about, like, habits, like establishing the habits. We just talked about Evan Mobley, like, learning getting how to better. See the court as he's in transition. That's the type of stuff you're working on in the regular season.
You get better in real time. Like, coaches, all, it sounds like a cliche. It's either you're getting better or you got worse today. Like, it's about putting together habits. It's about building structure and culture. And that's the problem that we talk about with the Cleveland Browns, right? We go back to the Browns a little bit and you kind of say, the reason we're so disappointed in the Browns is because we felt like we had built enough stability that our culture would prop us up in times when you don't have it. And you look at the Steelers. It don't matter who's that quarterback.
How many times do we talk about, like, Mike Tomlin's, like, philosophy and the culture over there? Like, every year it comes up. Every year we're ready to write off the Steelers. We're like, this is the year the Browns sweep them. And then every year they're right there in the playoff December.
They don't fold under Mason Rudolph. They didn't fold under Kenny Pickett. They didn't fold under Justin Fields or Russell Wilson.
Duck Hodges, like you said.
They still play the same way. They still get the wins because they already know this is what we do. We don't play no other way. See, the Browns get to a point where it's like, well, if we don't have all of our players that are 100% healthy, we can't do anything. What? The Ravens every single year. It don't matter if they miss on defensive linemen or miss over here. Guess what? They got a culture that says, no, when you step in, you're expected to play a certain way. So for the Cavs, I'm looking for that. I'm looking for a place where not only are you contenders this year, but I need you to be to a point where you're like the Spurs or you're like the, you know, the Warriors to a certain extent, or the teams that are like, hey, we're going to be around for a long period of time. We might have to make tweaks. But we're going to be here.
They got to definitely prove that. And I do think, to your point on, like, the injuries and like, the Celtics are a juggernaut largely because they, like, think about how they won the finals last year. they got there without Kristaps Porzingis for like large portions of that postseason run. He was even still banged up in the finals. Like, they proved they were a deep team and that you were going to get their best every single night from all of those guys that were playing. And it's funny, like the last 2 years, I found myself trying to tout how great the depth of this Cavaliers roster I thought was. And with JB, we didn't see it. Because he had his structure. He was like, I'm only going 8, maybe 9 guys deep off my bench. But 8 was kind of the standard. He wasn't really going beyond 8. And that's why, like, in the playoffs, you got people clamoring for, like, why didn't this guy play? Why didn't that guy play? And it's like, guys, you first of all, that guy wasn't going to save your season anyway. But at the same time, like, that's just not the way JB Bickerstaff does things. This is the first year, and I, again, 3 straight years of me saying, this team has a lot of depth, this team has a lot of depth. This is the first year you're seeing a coach tap into that depth. He's not playing anybody more than like 32, 33 minutes. Like, as much as we got on JB for Donovan playing like 35 to 38 minutes every night, it was like, why was he doing this?
Running them.
Yeah.
Running them.
Kenny Atkinson has not done that. He's trying to use guys off the bench like Caris LeVert, like Isaac Okoro, like Ty Jerome, who's had a fantastic start to the season, like Craig Porter Jr. And that is the stuff that, to your point, G, like, that benefits you when you get to the playoffs, because if Darius Garland misses a game with an injury, you know you feel comfortable that there's going to be somebody else who can kind of step up and at least give you something respectable in that role.
Yeah, you got guys that if Darius Garland is your third best player, awesome. You know why? That means Evan Mobley is a baller. Evan Mobley is doing and expanding his game. Donovan Mitchell is still being a closer. And I think that's why you see Darius Garland to a certain extent playing a lot more freer, because it isn't just him at the top of the key running pick and roll, trying to dribble around, playing ring around a Rosie, finding somebody. Or, you know, it just the offense is more free. Everybody's moving.
Yeah.
Bodies are moving. People are moving. And it's just a freer system, and a ball has energy, and they're playing with it right now.
Yeah, it's been awesome to watch, and I certainly think there is reason to believe that this team can exceed our expectations. I just don't know if I'm ready to go there with it yet, because we all know we got to see this in the playoffs first, but it is exciting, and I do expect, like, a win like tonight, I think we'll have people talking. They're already talking differently about the Cavs, but I think this is one that will sort of cement them as, like, okay, if there's anybody left out there that is still sort of like, I got to see more, I think tonight is your more. I think tonight is a game that is kind of the more of that conversation. And I do think when you get to December 1st, how they play that first matchup with the Celtics, that will be another talking point for people to sort of talk themselves into whatever type of changing or evolving expectations somebody might have for this team. I'm trying to sort of stay level-headed about it, because we know it's about the playoffs when it's all said and done.
Well, here's the reason I'm going to be so dialed in, because I just want to forget about the Browns. Like, for real. Like,
I think the Cavs season started at the perfect time.
That was
like, what, 3 weeks ago? Yeah. And the Browns at that point were like 1-4. It was this season feels over.
This is the worst part about the Browns is, there isn't even one guy that you look at and like, oh my gosh, look at that quarterback right there. If we lose all our games, we can at least get that prize. There ain't even one of those in the draft.
You ever seen the movie Fever Pitch?
No, I haven't.
So there's this scene in Fever Pitch where Jimmy Fallon, I don't know if you know the concept. The whole movie is like Jimmy Fallon's a Red Sox fan, mm-hmm. and it takes place in the year they broke the curse in 2004 and all that. There's a scene where he's talking about his love for the Red Sox, and this kid says to him, he's like, you love the Red Sox, but have the Red Sox ever loved you back? And it's like the whole thing that it makes him realize he needs to like pursue Drew Barrymore and actually like marry her.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it feels like between the Browns and the Cavs right now. It's like, have the Browns ever loved you back? Because the Cavaliers have loved you back. They won you a title. They brought you a championship. Yeah,
the Guardians went to the ALCS. Like,
yeah,
it's, you know, I need something to distract myself. But I think the Cleveland is a really big basketball town when they're good.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's a lot of cities, but I think Cleveland definitely gets into it. We've seen it. When at the peak of LeBron, man, this team was into it when they were at their best, and I think we're seeing that now this year. There's a lot of excitement for this team, and there should be. When do you change or up your expectations for the Cavs, given the start of the season that they've had?
Sometimes you just need a fix.
FML, my life.
My life.
FML,
fix my life.
Kenny, what do we do?
Fixing lives.
My life.
Even when Ken and Lime aren't here, we still got lives to fix. And Garrett, from what I understand, you have a problem on your hands pertaining to celebrating the holidays, which, by the way, I don't think it's an issue. This does not revolve around celebrating the holidays too early or any of that stuff. This is like, if you do what you want to do, but this seems like might be crossing the line a little bit.
Yeah.
At least for you.
It's out of pocket. So let me explain. So my mother calls me the other day, and you know, my wife is Filipino, and they skip Halloween, and they really skip Thanksgiving, because it didn't dawn on me that Thanksgiving was just an American thing.
They don't
celebrate
the pilgrims coming.
Right, the whole pilgrim, okay, well. The whole pilgrim story. I'm like, yeah, you is okay. Right. That is kind of crazy. They go right to Christmas. So I got two Christmas trees up. Everything is full clad. I'm the only house and on the block with all kind of bells and whistles outside of my crib right now. And so
your wife was one of the people like up at midnight on November 1st. Decorations already up.
No. What you mean? October 20th, something. What you mean?
October. Oh, yeah. You said they skip Halloween.
Yeah, skip all that. So my mom, she's in a festive mood. So she hits me up and says, listen, hey, guys. So I got three brothers. I'm the oldest of three brothers. Me and my middle brother are married, and my brother, he has a daughter. So she's the only grandchild in the family. So she's like, yeah, I was looking at this magazine, and I was wanting to know, we should get together and do one of those pajama things. I said, what you mean pajama things? Yeah, we get to match up pajamas, and then what I thought was, we could get to match up pajamas. And you already know when like black people start really getting into it, because they be pausing. She's like, then what we can put these on Christmas cards and send them to people. And I didn't even have to step up. My brother was like, nah, that's a party foul. My younger brother was like, I completely concur. That is definitely a party foul. We're not doing that.
It is your mom, though, Garrett.
And we shut her
this
all the way down.
This is your mom.
We shut her all the way down in the Christmas spirit. We're like, listen, I said, Dad, if you want to do that, that's your girl. Hey, if your girl wants you to do that, I understand how about doing stuff that you don't want to do. Have at it with the Where's Waldo Christmas gear. Now, I had to come to y'all, because you know me, I'm thinking maybe this is a cultural thing, you know, because she was taking it kind of hard. She was like, I don't understand
your
why
mom
you,
was.
I don't understand why you guys don't want to do that. And I'm sitting there being like, listen, mom, where was this at? When we was growing up, we ain't had none of this stuff. Do not get to a point in life where all of a sudden you want to do matching pajamas. And I've always had a problem with this. Is this actually something that is cool? I don't believe that a Christmas present or a Christmas gift should be a picture of my family that I'm sending to you to sit on your refrigerator.
So
that's wild.
The pajama thing, I'm going to be honest, like you brought asked if it was a cultural thing a second ago or a little bit ago.
Yeah.
My first thought was like, the only people I know who do that ever are like my white friends. Yeah, like they're always the ones doing the matching pajamas. Myself, and guilty, because my wife likes doing at least like we wear the ones on Christmas.
Yeah.
But we don't do like the Christmas card part of it. We don't do like the take the picture, send it out. We do send a Christmas card, but not with matching pajamas on it.
It was creepy. That's wild, bro. And it's me, and I'm like 6'5". I'm like 300. We in matching pajamas. And then I got to get your address. I got to be, hey,
well,
dog.
And I think the other key indicator here.
Hey, dog, let me get your address. For what?
I think the other key indicator here is like, yeah, if you have kids, I think this makes a lot of sense. Like that's the reason like we do it. It's like we now have my son.
Yeah.
Last couple of years, we try to get like the matching one with them.
And then me and
my wife wear the same thing.
The pants on Christmas morning only during present opening.
Yeah,
as soon as it's done,
exactly.
I immediately walk downstairs and get my gym shorts back on.
That's the way we do it. Like that night, I will play
the game for that hour and a half.
And I extend it out to like that night, we'll wear them. And we'll wear them in the morning for opening presents. And then I change and that's it. Like that's exactly the same thing.
He's asking you to do this and... November 10th.
But to like document it in a way, like I get it if you're documenting it for like your own stuff, right. Like, oh, it's on my phone or whatever. But to document it in a way where then you're sending it to your friends.
Garrett, I'm a little disappointed that you wouldn't do it for your mother. But I can fully understand
how you're
not going to text your boy who you grew up going to the club with, right?
Let me get your address.
And then go, hey, I need your address. And they're like, oh, are we about to get into something again? No.
You're like, what?
My whole family has decided that we're going to have matching candy cane pajamas.
Thank you for fixing my situation because I was feeling bad.
You can't do it.
I was feeling bad. I was like, maybe I'm not in good Christmas cheer. And I said, plus, look, and here's the thing. I told you guys this. So, you know, me and my wife, we're trying to have kids, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, listen, mom, you do know that this is like a... This was like, you got to have a offspring
right.
to get this off.
Yeah.
And if we wear them pajamas, she is really emotional right now. She may break down in those pajamas. Oh, my gosh. This is not good. And then I'm out here
it's
looking
ruin
around.
Christmas for everybody.
I said, you about to ruin the whole weekend. They go, but you don't want. I'm already under enough pressure as it is.
Tell you, Garrett, that if you decide to go through with this or if you get talked into doing it or she just shows up at your house with the stuff and it's ready to go, you've got to go full blown. You've got to do the rosy cheeks, get the makeup on the cheeks
and make them
rosy.
It's embarrassing, yeah.
You might as
exactly.
well.
Exactly, just go
if
overboard.
If you're doing it, you better be full blown all the way.
Really lean into the bit at that point.
I mean, we're like, it's me and my brothers, we're big. Like we big, like it's like we trying to find extra size jogging pants because they don't come in certain sizes. Like I'm like, mom, you don't understand that. You know how you need a 40 size waist for some of these bottoms. Where are you getting 40 size candy cane bottoms at?
I think you're taking the right approach to this. Like to the point. Like if this is something you do with your family as you start growing, having kids, all that different stuff, that's fine. If my mom called me up today and was like, hey, we're going to get all the kids together. We're going to do this. It'd be a nice thing. I would definitely feel some type of way about it. So I'm 100%
there
with you
go.
On this.
Hey, mom, I don't feel bad no more. I was feeling bad for you.
You had your chance. It's not my fault that matching pajamas wasn't a thing when we were kids. You had your chance.
Don't try to relive that.
Don't try to put it on me now that I'm 33 years old. Like, no, I'm doing that with my family. We keep that in the past,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we're going to keep that in
the past. We keep the past the past.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate
216-474-0092. If are you okay wearing matching pajamas and making that your Christmas card for the year? As you can tell from us, we are very much not.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.